Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. And now, Star Fuentes.
Hey everybody, it's Mark Ross and welcome to Spiritual Connections Radio. We're actually having a little problems with the switchboard right now and I'm just getting ready to pull Star and our guest onto the show. I'm just going to play some music for a moment while I go and pull in our host and our guest. So bear with me for a moment. Thank you.
The cost left my heart broken, so I had it closed for repairs. Wandering in my desert, your oasis refuses. You're like a long, cool drink of water. I'm thirsty, that's clear when I taste you. I know you, I know you, I do. So can you feel it? Tell me I need to know.
There we go. Star, all yours.
This is Star, and after the break, we'll be taking callers. The number is 646-716-9663. And this evening, I am pleased to have Trish Malone with me. Are you there, Trish?
Hello. Yes, I am. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, great. Tell us about how you got on your spiritual path.
Well, I think that I feel like I've been on my spiritual path since I was very small. I felt in tune with different things since I was 4 or 5, just different realities and plants and animals and feeling the energy of things and became curious about it. And then as I grew older, began exploring different world wisdom traditions, including Native American traditions, Brazilian traditions, and Buddhism.
Wow, that's a nice combination. And tell me, how do you share with people what you've learned?
Well, I am a practicing psychotherapist, so I'm very lucky because I get to mix my own practice with what I do in working with people, and part of what I teach people is mindfulness skills and relaxation imagery. And I think that my clients who come to see me have all different beliefs and all different backgrounds, and that's wonderful. But I think on some level we're working with the creative, which is in touch with something higher.
It definitely is. So having that psychotherapist license gives you the space to bring in all sorts of Buddhism, Native American, Brazilian techniques to use on your clients. And that must make it pretty interesting. I imagine that all of the sessions look so different, right?
That's true, because I try to tailor it to each unique individual. So I try to kind of follow their interests and what they feel comfortable with, and that can you know, really have a wide range. But I also do workshop facilitation, and so then there's some teaching, and I might go in, you know, in a more Buddhist tradition direction, or you know, I used to teach the staff at the Omega Institute in upstate New York, and sometimes taught about some of the Brazilian traditions there. So workshop facilitation is always really a great space for that too.
It certainly is. What was the most memorable experience you've had along your spiritual path?
Wow, that's a really good question. You know, there have been more than one, but one that I have thought about a lot was kind of a simple moment that seemed very powerful, though. Where I was actually traveling in Brazil in my 20s, and I had been out visiting a small town, and then came back across on a ferry across a body of water late at night, and then I ended up in a little plaza in front of a big tree, and the light was kind of changing, and I just was standing under the tree looking up at it, and suddenly I had that experience of oneness with everything that I think you often seek but you don't often find. It was sort of by accident, but it was just at that moment, next to this tree, a jacaranda tree, and I never forgot it. It was just a really powerful, simple moment, but I felt that everything was perfect and everything was one.
That is profound moments in my life when I felt that connection to everything, and everything was perfect, and I was not I anymore, I was all.
Right.
It's great. You teach something called original beauty. Can you discuss that with me?
Sure. That's a program that I developed originally for teenage girls, because I work a lot with teenage girls on issues of self-esteem. And then I also started using it with women of all ages, and even, you know, with boys and men, because I think the idea is that we all have a source of really deep wisdom and beauty inside of us. And sometimes people focus so much on the outer that they lose touch with that inner wisdom and inner beauty. And I wanted to help people get back in touch with that and start to think about how that's really the source of true beauty, is what sort of glows out of people's eyes. And so I do a lot of different exercises with teen girls. We'll look at magazines and sort of take apart and critique the images and see how the magazines are sort of focusing on only the outer and not as much the inner. And a lot of times the girls have a lot of really great insights about that.
Well, that sounds very, very wonderful indeed. So I guess you're in New York, is that right?
That's right. I'm in upstate New York. I see people in Woodstock and also over in Dutchess County, not too far from Rhinebeck, where the Omega Institute is, and Woodstock, you know, the scene of all the music.
And how would we find you on the internet?
My website, you can just Google Trish Malone Original Wisdom, and my website will come up, and all my contact information is on there.
Well, that's good. Now talk to me. Talk to me about some of the miracles you've had in your private practice, or some of the strangest things you and your patients encountered, of course, without using any names. But tell me some different things that happened there in your practice.
Let's see. Well, I think some of the most interesting things that have come up have been when I do imagery with people. I do a kind of imagery that's based on a body of work called psychosynthesis. That was my first training before I went into more traditional programs. I got a certificate in psychosynthesis, and that's a very creative way of working with people. And so the imagery is a little bit different in that it's not strongly guided. It's more a practice of allowing. So people just relax, and I give them a very light structure, and then they allow things to bubble up from the depths, and then they kind of follow that. Whatever it is, it's valuable information. And so I think people have had some really profound experiences with that, where they've gone on journeys with their imagery, and you know, maybe, for example, you know, sometimes we do a kind of imagery where people would see, they invite a part of themselves to come out on the stage, and there's another, they imagine another part of themselves sort of witnessing this. And sometimes people have seen parts of themselves that they weren't really aware of or aware that they needed attention. You know, like maybe someone who's seemingly very successful imagines themselves sitting in the audience, and then suddenly they're faced with a very uncertain, nervous teenage part of themselves that needs a lot of reassurance and care. They're still carrying that around. That's still sort of driving a lot of their actions. So stuff like that has been pretty deep when people encounter these different aspects of themselves through imagery.
I think I got kicked out of psychosynthesis once.
Oh, you did.
All I could see was aliens. Oh, come on, there's no aliens in you. You really shouldn't be doing this or something like that. You know,
wow, that's pretty cool to get kicked out of psychosynthesis. You got to have some really intense, interesting imagery going
on. Well,
you
know, it was like everybody had something like, oh, I see myself as my inner child. Oh, I see myself when I was fat. Oh, I see myself when I was on drugs. And all I could see was aliens. And every time I had a turn or wherever, where was that? Oh, that might have been in Austin, Texas. Wherever I had a turn, all I had was aliens, and they were like, "Stall, you can't be telling this stuff. Like, other people feel like their stuff's not good enough." And, okay, I'm leaving.
Wow. Well, I would have loved to
just say that's what it is with me. You know, it's a lot of alien connections. And even though, you know, I've trained with indigenous shamans and various different things, right now my life is very, very much into dreaming physics formulas, advanced physics formulas, and talking to sentient races that are somewhere else across the galaxy. So sometimes I feel a little weird about that, and sometimes I feel really good about that.
Oh, I think that sounds wonderful. You know, I think it's, I would have loved to have heard all about your aliens. If I were here.
I'm doing this new thing now called the E8. And E8 is the physics theory of everything. And a lot of mathematical theories exist, but most of them can't fit gravity into the equation. Well, this theory fits gravity and everything, and it says that there are 242 dimensions out there, and there is this map that is created by subatomical particles. It's like one of these geometric pulley things where you pull a shape out, and none of the sticks cross, but they all, you know, make points.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I've been dreaming and seeing that maybe for us to get in contact with alien beings, we don't have to get a ship out there, and we don't have to have a major crisis on planet Earth. We just have to get our consciousness to them.
Yeah.
So in some weirdness in my own way, and, you know, I determined that each one of these bends and dimensions in space is created by mindfulness and consciousness.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, we are consciousness, so.
And it's just sitting out there waiting for us to connect it, so
yeah.
I'm going to be doing some pretty advanced work, you know, get on a light suit, let's go out and visit this particular dimension. Now, unfortunately, the formula is like as big as the Empire State Building, so I can only show pieces of it to my students. So, you know, he'll look at this, your subconscious mind gets it.
Right. But
I'm pretty abnormal in that sense about where I am. But a long time ago, I learned in psychotherapy that nothing is wrong or incorrect. It's just what it is for you. Is that correct?
Well, I think so, and I think that's the ideas of traditional psychotherapy. And then I think that, you know, for myself, for my own beliefs, I believe in a sort of psycho-spiritual reality. So I think that we are all one, and we are consciousness. And so, you know, there's so much more going on than we can maybe sense with our five senses in the here and now. I mean, there, just because not everyone has experienced something doesn't mean it's not happening.
That's true. I remember one teacher a long time ago taking a sheet of paper and holding it over her face and says, I can't see anything. And then removing the paper and saying, that is what happens when you get connected to Source. It's, Source is always there. You were just in the way.
Right.
You know, and I was right. Like, wow, that's pretty profound.
Yeah.
So
That's great. Can I use that? Can
yes,
I use that?
You can, but
my client
better if you take a piece of paper and put it
okay.
over your face or let them do it.
That's really good.
So tell me, what are you working on right now, Trish?
Well, right now I'm doing a lot of writing and the, you know, I recently taught a workshop at the Omega Institute with three other teachers. One of them, a Buddhist Lama from the Kagyu tradition named Lama Yeshe. One of them, a psychiatrist named Dr. James Knoll, who's actually a forensic psychiatrist. And with Kel Juilliard, who's a practitioner and has a therapy background also, and a teacher. And it got me thinking about a lot of things. And we talked a lot about the workshop was called Emotional Healing from Trauma through Mindfulness. And so I think that got me thinking a lot, and I've been writing about that a lot and thinking about how we can just take all the things that happen to us, all our emotions and our experiences, whatever they are, and how to kind of integrate them. And I find writing to be a really integrative process for me. And then I hope that sharing that will be something will help others also in their ability to integrate their experiences.
Well, you know, I've been looking at working on something for the Veterans Administration, but also they just can't make up their mind. And I was working on this theory of healing trauma backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, what is the first thing? You go in the military, you give up your schedule, you give up your intuition, you do what they say, so you give up your integrity, and then you give up your decision-making process, and then you give up your intuition. I got a little list I'm working on, and I wanted to create a workshop where you heal it backwards. You heal the last thing they gave up, then the second to the last, and you end up healing this trauma by addressing the very first thing that they gave up. Trauma is such a multi-level experience, you know, for our vets and especially for women who've been sexually abused.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of getting it, that you have to heal the trauma backwards. What was the last thing that was up? What was it? You go all the way back to the first thing. And it's really interesting working with people and doing that when, you know, from car accidents to post-traumatic stress syndrome to sexual abuse. So I've been finding that very interesting. I'm not sure I quite got the whole picture I need to get to be able to teach other people to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm definitely working on it.
Yeah, I think that sounds very interesting because that, it's true that part of what happens is, you know, your normal, everything that's normal is disrupted. And so then you kind of have to go back and think, well, what was it like before everything was disrupted, you know, and who was I then? And then you can, when you trace that backwards, then you can kind of come back again to, well, who am I now?
You know? Oh, and isn't that just the typical question that people come back to, no matter what level they are in their spiritual growth? You know, they do their work and they come, oh, who am I? And then they go through a whole process that answers that, and they get that integrated. And then it's like, oh, who am I?
Right.
You know, it seems like every time, and I don't want to say there are levels, or any time we take a jump,
yeah,
we get used to it, and we come back to that question of who am I?
It's so true.
Millions of answers.
Yeah, it keeps changing. I know it keeps changing for me. It's a, you know, a guiding question. It never gets fully answered, and never gets, you know, I never get tired of trying to figure it out, I guess. It's part of why I probably like working with people about figuring out who they are, you know, because I get insight into myself as well. And so it's always changing, and it's always interesting.
And you use imagery as well, correct?
Yes, yes.
And how do you do that, sweetie?
I usually just get people to relax and through a kind of a few simple techniques, and then, you know, ask them to focus on their hands so they use a little bit of that mindfulness. And then I might have them focus on a different part of the body, like their chest or the center of their forehead. And then I'll give them, you know, a kind of a simple structure, like, you know, imagine a safe place. That's usually the very first one, because if you go further in imagery, you might need to go back to a safe place, you know. So then I have them imagine a safe place in as vivid detail as they can. And everybody's different. You know, some people see images, some people kind of feel it, some people hear it, some people even smell images, I guess, you know. So it's always interesting. And then, you know, it can be kind of information about the person too, like if they don't have a safe place, like that's, you know, information about something they need, or maybe they have a special person in their safe place, so that shows that they really trust that person, you know, or an animal. I've had people have like animal friends in a safe place, you know.
Well, everybody needs to remember to make their safe place and frequent it, and then take journeys from that safe place so you can easily come back to it.
Yeah.
So, Trish, have you written a book yet? Or is that just right coming from you now?
You know, I have written a couple of books. I haven't got anything published yet, but I'm working on it. And right now I'm writing a chapter for a book about emotional healing, trauma and Buddhism. That's going to be a collaboration with the other teachers from the Omega program I mentioned. So that's probably going to be available in, you know, in the next year or so. But yeah, I wrote a book about my experiences in Brazil, and I also wrote a young adult novel, kind of based on some of the things that I really wanted, especially the teen girls that I work with, you know, to just kind of empower them to think about. So it's an imaginative book, but I hope it has some examples of like a strong, feisty heroine that they could relate to. Because I felt like there were a lot of young adult novels out there that were sort of losing touch with that.
Yes, I was looking at all the new TV shows coming up, and every one of them, there's this evil juju that does boochy booch coochie to Earth. And I want to, you know, write a show so bad that these light beings come along and hitchhike and appear in truck stops and Burger Kings and heal people, and the universe just gets full of light. You know, I mean, everything I'm looking at on the TV is like, oh, this virus kills, and these aliens are evil, and these people are murderers, and these people are taking down the earth. I'm going, oh, just wouldn't it be lovely to have, you know, people going around doing random acts of kindness and spreading more light on the planet. And I'm going, wow, do you think anybody would watch that? You know?
Yeah, I think I would love that. I mean, I think that's so true. That's part of what, I mean, it's only natural to express our fears through the creative arts at times, but I think there's been this trend to just focus on that so much that now it's starting to create this idea of the future that, especially for young people, it's got to be a little scary and depressing that, you know, we're headed for, I don't know, the computers are going to take over the earth and everyone's going to be, you know, sick, and it's kind of scary. And so I think we need to have visions where people are hopeful.
But you know what? It's really, really strange. When I look at people and with my psychic abilities and stuff, I don't see a bunch of people dying by big atomic bombs, and I don't see a bunch of people ending Earth because of there's some disease. I see many people who are dying at many, many different times in the next 40 or 50 years, and I see many of them dying from accidents and natural diseases and different things like this. When I look into somebody's future, it's not like all of a sudden I see a billion people dying from, you know, some virus or something. It seems to me that when I look into people's lives, they're dying just as they did in the 60s. You know, when I look
right.
in people's lives. So even though there's a lot of talk about, you know, a pandemic or a something evil coming, when I'm looking, you know, and I talk to lots of people every year, there's nobody's dying all at once. So that is very comforting to me, you know, to see people die naturally with a stroke or heart attack. You know, I'm like, wow, isn't, you know, before I'm going, oh, my God, look at all these people dying. And I'm going, wow, thank God they're dying in their own way.
That's good. The thought that you have experienced that, I'm sure, is going to comfort
article.
Me.
Let me make a note about that. I'm going to write an article about looking at people's futures.
I think that would be very comforting to people, because we do hear this message so much that, you know, some people are saying that this is the, you know, the age of anxiety, and it's also the age of information. So if you're spreading that anxiety through this information global network that we have now, that's being created in our consciousness, and it's not helpful to people to have that repeated over and over and over and just be kind of constantly pummeled with that. And I think your vision is, you know, it's so comforting just to hear a different voice.
Well, that's good. We're coming right up on our half an hour break here, and you can call us at 646-716-9663.
You're listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher, and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com, and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. Once again, Star Fuentes.
And I'm sure our engineer will interrupt us when we have a call. Tell me about your traveling through Brazil a little bit more.
Oh, I love to talk about Brazil. I haven't been there in a long time, but when I was there, I was in my 20s, and it was it was not too long after they had ended this period where they were under a lot of political oppression. And I just was so struck by the people of Brazil, their hopefulness and their resilience. And everyone was so kind. And, you know, I went down to teach English as a second language, because that was something that I did back then. But I ended up not doing a lot of teaching, I just traveled around and visited friends, and everyone was so friendly. They'd say, come stay at my house, come stay at my house. And I'd end up, you know, going and staying at people's houses and for weeks and weeks
and
learning new things.
And then you'd meet somebody at their house whose house you'd go stay at, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was just like a huge network of instant friends. And so I traveled to Bahia at one point, which is the most African-influenced area in Brazil. And I was lucky enough to meet some women who were involved in a religion there called Candomblé, you know, which you may have encountered in your travels. And I thought it was really just amazing and very deep. And they invited me to a terreiro, you know, center of their religion. And people were actually possessed by the Candomblé gods and goddesses that are called orishas, and they danced as these gods and goddesses, and it was very powerful and very beautiful. There was lots of, you know, really loud, amazing drumming and people in costumes and so much emotion, and it just felt like a really cleansing and powerful thing for people to do there.
They're really alive, you know what I mean? You look into their eyes. What was it? What year was it? Let's see, 59 or 60. One of those years, I hitchhiked. Two of those years, I hitchhiked through South America, a woman alone.
Wow.
I'm just telling you, I just met so many shamans, and I just met so many people. And, you know, I would stay with somebody, and then somebody would say, go stay with my aunt. And, you know, and it was like from one place to the other. It was real easy.
Yeah, yeah. Just life just seemed to flow, and you know, I used my intuition a lot. I was traveling alone also, and you know, yes, one person would lead to another, and then you'd find out more, and a door would be opened, and you'd learn something else, and it was really amazing. So I felt very lucky to learn about those practices. I also learned about another Brazilian religion that was Umbanda, which was like Candomblé, but where they were using energy.
Uh-huh.
To the gods and goddesses, to the orishas, instead of, you know, the old way, which was a traditional sacrifice, you know. But this was, they were just offering up energy. That was a really interesting religion. And I met healers there and you know, received a healing. And then I met people who were involved in the tradition that uses the plants, you know, the plant.
Mm-hmm.
The daimi tradition, and you know, it's just so alive in Brazil. Everything's possible, kind of all at the same time. You know, people will go to church, but they also go to, you know, the Candomblé Terreiro. They might go to the Umbanda, then they go to the Buddhist center down the road. You know, they go everywhere. They don't worry about it.
It's just like a buffet. I remember way long ago. I think I don't remember where it was. That was where the rubber trees. Oh, where was that? Northern Brazil. And that lady said, come, we bake up a cake. And we made a three-layer cake, and we frosted it with 6-7 different colors. I was like, okay, where's the pretty one? We're going to eat it. And they looked at me and go, oh, no, we're going to float this in the river for our shrine. What? Oh, yeah, well, this is an offering.
Oh, wow.
And they put this cake, and they put their silver earrings on it and little pieces of glitter, and they floated it into the river, let the water take it away. I was like, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you spend all this energy baking this cake, and you give this energy up to create something else.
Right, yeah.
And that was just so many times in my travels around the world. And I thought I knew so much. And I'd go, what are you doing this? Or what's going on? And they'd look at me. And then they'd educate me in a whole different way, you know. And finally I got wise enough where I watched and learned. And I stopped trying to ask questions or say, why don't we do it this way?
Right. To just follow. Yeah, it's really... It's an education. I definitely felt like I went down I went down to Brazil, one person, and I did, I asked that question again, who am I? Came back, you know, a little bit different and just more open, more flexible, and it was really a great place. I really just feel a lot of gratitude that I got to visit.
I think my students feel a lot of gratitude that I lived in the bush for 13, 16 years, and that I chopped wood and carried water, and that I made 1,000 fires and birthed 300 babies, that I did all that stuff, so they don't have to go to Mexico or Brazil or India or China, and that they can sit in a room with me, and they can get the downloads from and the information from me telling the stories, that they can actually get a little piece of the world, another piece of oneness. And
right.
Also, everywhere you go, everybody, you take yourself and everything you know. And the subconscious mind picks up 10,000 things a minute. So you're learning everything that every one of your teachers ever learned. You're learning everything that everybody in the room ever learned. And I believe when you are ripe, you're at the right place, the right appropriate vibration, all this wisdom will come to you. And now with the Internet, it's like I'm talking to people in Sri Lanka and Mexico and Iceland all at the same time.
Yeah.
You know? And it's amazing.
It is amazing.
How close we are.
It is. It is. And I think, you know, that's so wonderful to hear the way that you experience that and that you feel that, sense that. That helps me to understand some more about it. And I do think it's so important, as we are all connected and we're sort of bringing all this information to each other and sharing it more through this electronic means, to think about what you want to share and to do it in a way that feels right to you, like we were talking about before.
And becoming educated about something. You know, when I learned about the chakras, I was like, oh, look at the pretty colors. Oh, look at this. Look at how many flowers on the dish chakra. And then when I went to teach it, that was grad school, because I was thinking, what if an engineer came? Oh, what does the chakra say? What musical note is it? What does a musician come? And for me, when I started writing the classes, that was graduate school, because I didn't see it from Star's vision anymore. I had to look at it from another 100 people's. Well, what a child need to learn in this class? Well, what a master?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what can I say in this class that would give the master something to take? And for me, the teaching and the seminar leading has been graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes, most of the time, I learn more from my students, you know?
It's yeah.
No matter if it's the same course I taught 18 times, I'm definitely learning from the students all the time.
Yeah, yeah, it's always, they can exchange, you know, that's the part that's going on that energetic level, that there's an exchange, and that's what's so exciting. You know, that's one thing I love about doing, you know, just any time that you're with others, you know, this conversation or sitting with people doing therapy or in a workshop, or, you know, it's just this exchange of people trying to share something from the mind and the heart. But there's also, like you said, there's something going on energetically that's on an unconscious level, a subconscious level, that is very nourishing, I think, when it's positive. It's really nourishing.
Well, you know, sometimes when it's not positive, I've seen people break down in tears and go into Agni in one of my classes to heal something, and I look around the audience and 13 other people are having a release. Sometimes it doesn't have to be pleasant. It
right.
just has
right.
to be appropriate.
Right.
You
right.
know? And, you know, I've seen people talk about the deaths of their parents and children, and other people in the room have bigger healings than the person who was talking.
Yeah.
you know, so it has to be appropriate. And you know, I think it's really important to have teacher or teachers. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think for me, it changed my life so many ways, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very important, because there are people who have expertise and experiences that, you know, that we might not have. And so it's really good to learn from them.
But yeah. But for me, it's the feedback. My girlfriends are like, oh, wow, you're so cool, you're so clear, you're so smart, yada, yada, yada. But my teachers are like, oh, whoa, where are you going in that direction? That's not what you teach. Now, why were you saying something like that? That isn't, oh, you did a good job. You know what I mean? I
yeah.
really like that honest feedback that a teacher gives you.
Yeah.
You know, my friends are a little bit prejudiced. They really love me. You know, and what kind of feedback I get from them, they're like, you know, I it's good, it's loving, but it doesn't wake me up like my teachers wake me up with their feedback.
Right, so. Right. A teacher can challenge, definitely, and can push you into those uncomfortable places that cause you to grow. I mean, usually when people grow, they don't, I mean, you can grow. I think you can definitely grow from positive things and good times and great experiences. But, you know, usually when you really grow, it's because you've gone through something hard. You know, when people say, oh, I learned a lot, you know, they're not usually saying, I had a great time, I went on a cruise, you know. It's usually something hard.
If, you know, sometimes it's just facing something in you, and it can be hard or it can be lighthearted. It doesn't matter. And sometimes it's supporting somebody facing something that you have in you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I said, I've seen one person just have a horrific pain and tears, and 13 and 14 other people in the same workshop just crying and healing as fast as they can, you know, and
yeah.
positive situations. You know, we laughed so hard there was no pain left in the room, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah.
a good saying. I gotta write that down. Laugh so hard there was no pain left in the room. Okay. That's the third thing. That's a record for me.
That sounds like a good moment. A good moment.
Yes. Yes. So I have another website. It's called MasterYourLight.com. I have so many fun things on there. I've got free things. I've got things you can buy. I've got quizzes you can take. Why don't you guys get on MasterYourLight.com? Find something you want to do on there. There's lots of free audio messages. And, of course, there's lots of things you can pay for. Hey, I got 8 or 9 books out. Most of them are at GatherInsight.com. Take a look. There's a lot of great spiritual authors there right now. And, Trish, tell me, where can we get a hold of you?
I'm online at Trish Malone at originalwisdom.org. You can just put that in, KK5 originalwisdom.org, or Trish Malone and Original Wisdom, and it'll come up on Google. And on there I have information about the way that I work with people, where my practice is, how I can be reached for doing workshops, and also information about my writing and upcoming publications.
And, wow, I just forgot who's going to... Oh, and you do work over the phone, correct?
I do, and also by Skype. I can do
yeah.
work by Skype with people. And, you know, as well as... I mean, I do traditional psychotherapy, you know, in an office, but I can also do work that is more related to integrating that spiritual part of the work. And that's a big part of Original Wisdom that I really developed... That's a method of working with people that I really developed myself. That's a combination of psychosynthesis and Buddhism and world wisdom traditions and just creativity and how to access your own inner creativity.
Well, that feels good. And you've led workshops all over the world?
I would say, I mean, I led workshops when I was in Brazil and around the States and, at the Omega Institute. But I'd like to lead more workshops in more places in the world. It'd be great.
You guys hear that? All you guys who have promoted me listening right now, all my favorite promoters in all the different cities, Trish is up for coming to your center and doing a workshop. And I'm sure she knew you could devise something beautifully, exactly what your clients need, what your center needs at this moment in time. So Trish would be open to doing that. Maybe, Trish, I can have you next year sometime down in Hot Springs. I got this beautiful 6,000 round foot geodesic dome.
Wow.
It seats several hundred people, and I do services there on Sunday, and teachers come and teach, and I teach, and it's beautiful. Yeah.
Oh, it sounds amazing. Thank you so much.
All right. Any particular story you'd like to tell our listening audience, since they're not calling in with questions today, any particular story you'd like to tell them about learning something along your spiritual path or emotional path this lifetime?
What I've been thinking about lately since I did this work that combines trauma with healing is I thought about how in my own work as a therapist, I've had to work sometimes with my own feelings of trauma from hearing so many stories of trauma, and that's called vicarious trauma. And I worked for 6 years in therapeutic foster care with children who were, whose parents were no longer able to care for them in a regular way, and that left me with a lot of sad stories and sadness and heaviness around all that, and when that that translates into symptoms that are sometimes referred to as vicarious trauma. And so anyone who's a caregiver, a caretaker, can go through this, or a healer, you hear so much suffering. If you're a sensitive person, you can take it on. You have to learn ways to let it go. But the other side of that is that you also learn the skills of vicarious resilience. So you see how people have this amazing ability to bounce back and come through really difficult things and still have so much love in their hearts to give after going through so much. And that's been, the gift of going through that. So I think, that's been a real passage for me to have worked with people who were suffering a lot and then to kind of take on some of that myself and have to struggle with some of those similar symptoms to what my clients were going through, and then to learn ways to work with that in myself. And a lot of what worked for me was going to that higher realm, mindfulness, meditation, creativity, imagery, relaxation, energy. Those are the things that healed those difficult stuff and trauma for me. So I think, I'd like people to know that that works.
Well, we sometimes call it the wounded healer, but that's a whole different way of being wounded. I was the National Bureau of Missing Children psychic for a year back in 1991.
Wow.
I had I get at that time they were faxing. They faxed me the picture and the details and stuff, and, I was seeing so many children that were dead or abused or, that just have gone off their path. And I had to do a 365-day program. I was that for a year. And I had to develop a 365-day program just to get that stuff out of my system.
Wow.
The whole next year I did something every day to get the memories and the connecting with the children that were buried and connecting with the children that were alive and got to see their moms. And it was intense. It was a very intense year, and I will not do that again this lifetime. But, wow, that's all I have to say. I had to put my finger down and say, stop, you got to do something about this. I said, I worked 30 days, next 30 days, it wasn't enough, 60, 90. I got to 90, so I worked 180, and I said, it wasn't enough. So I had to work a full year, equal amount of time as I did it, to clear it from my systems.
Wow, that's that's really, that's profound to me. That's like, can I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question?
Yes, go ahead.
What specifically did you do? Because that's something that I think is so, I mean, maybe there were many things that you did, but, you know, I'm still looking for ways, practices, means to help people move through that level of trauma.
Well, I did some, you know, cleansing of my organs and stuff, but the biggest piece that there was for me was remembering something that had happened in my life. I went to this lady's house, and she was a doctor or something, and her husband was a couch potato. And very early on, my 30s or 40s, I looked at him and I said, oh, my God, he's such a loser of a man. There he is sitting on the couch eating potato chips, watching TV while she's, you know, working two stints as a doctor. Well, mm-hmm. I went on, and I came back 20 or 30 years later to the same town, and I looked at this man, and I had a vision that he had worked in Europe. And he had taken a village and brought cottage industries to it, got running water. He got them to do some more gardening. At the lifetime, and he didn't marry and have kids. And the lifetime before that, he did something arduous and hard. And the lifetime before that, he copied scrolls till he went blind in a Tibetan piece, in a Tibetan monastery.
Huh.
So what I didn't see for 30 or 40 years till I went back and looked at this man again was the big picture. So I always went back when I had found a child dead or something. I would not say, this is now, I am not powerful enough to see the big picture. You know, that this is part of a bigger picture. He taught the children in his school not to talk to strangers. He taught the parents in his community to educate the children better. You know, he taught people to put up safeguards. This is a big teaching.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so every day I would go through whatever I was doing on. I do some type of physical cleansing, and I do something I call the big picture. And if some kid or face would come up, sometimes a name would come up with no face, and sometimes a face with no name or an energy, I would say, okay, I'm not seeing the big picture. What was the benefits of this child's death? What happened? What possibilities came out of this? So I did this till I think every child that came in came out as me seeing a bigger part of the big picture, how something bad, how something good, they were even found, benefited the community, the parents, and other children around them, and even the police.
Wow.
So that was the big picture is like, you know, I couldn't believe it when I came back and I looked at this person who I judged as a couch potato.
Yeah.
You know, no good man. Why don't she's such brilliant? She's got so much light. His lifetime was to be resting this lifetime. He wasn't supposed to do anything but live. And I was misjudgment. I'd see people on the streets when I was in my 30s and 40s and 50s. I'd see people in the streets with a sign, I need money, and go, yeah, you want to buy drugs? I'm not giving you any money. You want to buy alcohol? And since the 60s and 70s, when I see him now, all I do is, God bless you, here's a healing. You know, somewhere along my life, judgment just stopped.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I started giving healings and blessings to people instead of judging. And I'm trying to put, you know, the marker, the year, the day that happened, the lesson I got, but I can't find it, so it must have been a synthesis of many things. So anytime I see someone who's limping, I don't say, well, look at that person with a bad hip. I give them a healing and a blessing. Anytime I see someone with a sign, I give them a... So I've started not being as judgmental as I was in my 30s, 40s, and 50s. So, you know, when I look at it and I say, oh, my God, I'm 75 years old, and I look at all the different things I've been through, I mean, I thought I was so smart when I was 30 and 40 and 50, and I thought, wow, you know, I'm really cool. I'm really spiritual. And there are so many more things I've gotten from life, you know,
yeah,
from other people. And just watching my, it's like going back to your high school yearbook and looking at your hairstyle and going, what was I thinking? You know, so.
Wow, that's a wonderful, wonderful story. That's a wonderful answer. The big picture, I can remember that.
Yeah, so Trish Malone is with us tonight. She teaches original wisdom. She's a psychotherapist. She's written a children's book. She believes and teaches original beauty. She does appointments. You can find her by Googling Trish Malone. And is that original beauty or?
Original wisdom.
Original wisdom. And I foresee a book coming from you in the next 3 years, and the title is going to be Original Wisdom. And it's going to be a very powerful tool for you.
Oh, thank you, Star. Thank you. I really feel just so blessed to have been able to have this conversation with you.
I have just one question to ask. Are you married?
Sure. Yes, I am. Yes.
And how has that worked out for you? How is that?
It's really good, and I have a 6-year-old son who's just an amazing light in my life. He's a blessing, and I was I'm a midlife mama. I had him when I was 43, and it's just an amazing journey to be with him and his father, and we just are, you know, living the fullness of all of that, of being, you know, myself getting older but having this little boy and being a mom and working. And it's very, you know, sometimes it's I call it a goat rodeo.
Oh my god!
Sometimes
it's
crazy, but then the great thing is that you see there's all this chaos and movement, and everybody's running around, and then everything settles down again, and it's wonderful. So it's just I guess Jon Kabat-Zinn calls it the full catastrophe, and I really feel like parenting is the full catastrophe and the full blessing too. So.
Well, I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I'm definitely going to be looking up more of your little children's book and seeing what else I can find out about you. And we will talk to you again next year. Well, thank you, Trish, for being with us.
Thank you so much, Star. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. And we're coming up to our closing.
On behalf of Spiritual Connections Radio, thank you for listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Please join us again next week for another enlivening episode. For more information on Star's classes or services, visit her website at www.starfuentes.com or call the office at 501-609-0660. That's 501-609-0660.